Welcome to the Real Estate Mogul Podcast, where you'll learn how to leverage investing strategies in your real estate business. Featuring in-depth masterminds with experts on real estate sales, investing, wealth building, and lead generation. With each episode, you'll build a toolbox of strategies for generating motivated seller leads and giving them out-of-the-box options to reach their goals while putting more money in your pocket. And now, here's your host, Tom Caffarella.
Hey everyone, this is Tom Caffarella from the Real Estate Mogul Podcast. I am really excited for the guest that we have today, Diego Corzo out of Austin, Texas. What's going on, Diego?
Hey, Tom, very excited to be here.
Thank you for coming on. So the topic for today is we're going to talk about, focus on how you got out of the corporate world and to become a full-time real estate investor. Because that's the biggest thing that I hear from everybody who wants to get into real estate investing is they want to quit their 9-to-5 job, and you have successfully done that. Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about what you were doing in corporate America when you were there.
Yeah, exactly. I'll be more than happy to share. So what happened was I graduated college when I was 23. I studied information technology, and I got a job right after I graduated with GM, the car company.
Yeah.
They hired me in the college, in the college graduate program, which allowed me to choose a technology job, and they gave me an opportunity to go to either Austin or Detroit. Mm-hmm. And I chose Austin, and that was my first transition into corporate America. I moved to Austin and I worked at GM for about 2 years.
Yep.
I did software development. And after the 2 years, I decided that it was time for me to quit my job. But in that time, in those 2 years, I had read Rich Dad Poor Dad. I had invested into some properties just a little bit, and I also got my license.
So at what point did you know that corporate America wasn't for you?
I realized that corporate America wasn't for me when I could see other employees that weren't, that I would put in 50 hours or 40 hours, and some of the employees would only work 35 hours.
Yep.
But we were getting the same salary. So yep. I realized that that no matter what, how long I could work, our pay is going to be the same. And I decided to focus into getting into an occupation where your time, your effort determines your success.
Yeah, it's kind of a funny thing. And, you know, it's not true of all jobs in corporate America, but that was one of the most frustrating things for me as well. I was a CPA and I worked for a big firm right out of college. And, mm-hmm. you know, you would look at the pay scales and people that were 2 or 3 or 4 years ahead of you. And the people that were really good 2 or 3 or 4 years ahead of you were only making a little bit more than the people who were average or below average that were 2 or 3 years ahead of you. And then even to me, 20, 30 years out, I was always looking at, well, what are the people doing that are at the, you know, end game, the mm-hmm. 40, 45, 50 year olds? And what I saw, and, you know, to me was the most frustrating, is those people were still working just as hard as the people who were in their 20s and 30s. And there seemed to be kind of no ending sight. I don't know if that was the same with you as well.
Yeah, I saw that no matter what, that 20 years later doing the same thing, I will be in the cubicle next door, but we will still be there, fight traffic. And I decided that that wasn't what I wanted to do. And I wanted to have in the future the flexibility to work either from whatever I wanted or at different times and make my own schedule.
So did you kind of go cold turkey? Did you quit your job and then become a real estate investor, or did you kind of ease your way into it while you had your full-time job?
Yeah, in that sense, I actually eased my way into it. Mm-hmm. I realized that that the banks, if you're buying homes the conventional way, they love the W-2 tax returns, right? Yeah. So you can, you, what I decided to do is to get into as much of good debt before I quit my job. Yeah. And I started with one of my first properties was through the strategy called house hacking, where I decided to buy a 4-bedroom home, rent out the 3 rooms and live for free. Okay. So what that helped me was that all of a sudden my living expenses were extremely low. So I didn't have to depend on my salary income to live.
And I think that's one of the big traps a lot of people get in. They get a pay raise, then they get a nicer apartment, or they get, you know, a bigger house, and then essentially they're just always working for money. And so
exactly.
Now, were you at exactly break even when you were doing the house hacking, or were you making a couple bucks or losing a couple bucks?
When I did the house hacking, I was paying off the mortgage, and I was making $300 a month extra. Okay. And the cool part about that is that I also had a car payment at that time that was like around $300.
Yep.
So by me buying a house, just putting 5% down, I actually covered my mortgage, the rental income, plus my car. So then all of my expenses were just on food and travel.
Food and travel. So yeah, effectively, I mean, you don't need to travel. I mean, but you do need to eat. So, but you could live, you could make very little income and still survive effectively.
Exactly. Exactly. So what that bought me was the opportunity that I didn't need money anymore, and I could explore different things and spend my time wisely.
So I think the big takeaway there is that, you know, some people wouldn't do what you did. Some people will say, well, I don't want to live with other people, or, you know, I don't want to own rental property, but it allowed you to completely, you know, basically have no bills.
Exactly.
So when you left your job, did you have just that one property at that time, or had you already accumulated other rental units?
By the time that I left my job, I probably had around 4 to 5 doors.
4 to 5 doors. Okay. Yeah. And the first property, again, refresh my memory, you said that was a single family, right?
The first property was a single family, and I actually bought that one in Florida with my dad. I partnered up with him. And then that was in Florida while I lived in Austin, Texas. I still had to get my finances fixed a little bit with my credit score and stuff like that so that I could buy a house here in Austin and house hack.
Yep.
So I started in Florida just so that I can get started. Because what a lot of people do is they always try to go for like the home run on their first property. What I decided to do is like, I just wanted to get into it, even if I had a partner or maybe two partners, just so that I can get that experience.
Yeah, definitely. The first one is always the hardest because you always have the most doubts. You don't know what's going to happen. It's funny because like, you know, a lot of times the first property, you're taking very little risk, but it feels mentally like you just took some huge, you know, risk and you don't know what's going to happen. And so you got the one in Florida, you got the one in Austin.
Yeah.
What was the next step after that for you?
The next step after that, I decided to teach two of my friends I decided to teach them the difference between active income and passive income. Mm-hmm. I introduced them to Rich Dad Poor Dad. And when they got hungry, when there was a spark in their eyes, I decided to show them how we can buy properties and have their money work for them. So we decided to buy an investment property. Mm-hmm. We bought it together. So 33% partners. Mm-hmm. And that was the second property that I bought here in Austin. And after that, one of my best friends from high school, he decided to partner up with me, and we actually bought 2 more properties in Austin, 50-50 partners.
So all of those, so the first deal that you did, you put 5% down because it was an owner-occupied loan. Mm-hmm. The other ones after that, what percentage were you putting down on those?
In the ones that we bought here in Austin, We got the 20% conventional, and we split that. So if there were 2 partners, 50-50. If there were 3 partners, 33%.
And so what a lot of people do is exactly what Diego is doing, which is, you know, you put 20% down on the property, then a lot of times they will renovate it, wait for the equity to increase, and then pull money out. And on the, you know, the site Bigger Pockets, they refer that to that as the BRRRR strategy. Have you done that yet, or are you considering doing that?
So it's funny, about 2 days ago, I just bought a quadplex. Mm-hmm. So I just added that to my portfolio. Yeah. And that quadplex, it cost us $100,000. Mm-hmm. And we're bringing in gross $2,000.
And this is a quadplex in Austin?
This is a quadplex in Jacksonville, Florida.
I was going to say, I don't even...
Yeah,
Austin, you can never... Well, you know, it's funny because the Austin prices... How long have you lived in Austin for?
I've lived in Austin for 4 years.
Okay, so going back 10 or 15 years, you might have been able to get a quadplex in Austin for that price, but...
Probably.
Man, you guys have had some incredible growth with so many companies coming into that specific area.
Oh yeah, for real. And it's been, we've seen it where houses that I bought a house for $195 in 2015, and I just sold it for $243 2 years later. And I didn't do, we didn't put any money into it. It just appreciated.
So that's an interesting thing when it comes to rental properties that mm-hmm. I didn't realize when I first started to accumulate rental properties. I always bought them on cash flow. And I said, I'm never going to sell any of these properties. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, prices started to go way, way up. And it was hard for me to justify on some of them not selling because there had been so much appreciation in such a little period of time. I felt I could better deploy my capital into other properties. And I'm assuming that's what you kind of figured out on that one as well, right?
Exactly. So what I did is I sold a property that I have that I had here in Austin, and I used those proceeds to buy a property in Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. And that quadplex, we bought it for $100,000. We're gonna put around $6,000 to $8,000 into it.
Yep.
And after that, in a couple of months, we are going to get a loan on it, and it will probably appraise around 130. Mm-hmm. We can get 75% of our money out. So by that is we can probably take back $90,000 to $100,000, which is all the money that we put in. So yep. That will be my first try on the BRRRR strategy.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, whether or not you can get all of your money back out today, you will eventually be able to get all of your money back out. And obviously some of it's depending upon the lending environment, and some of it's depending on the appreciation on the property. But for the most part, every property that we've owned over 3 to 4 years, we've been able to pull money back out. And then obviously we reallocate that back into other properties.
Exactly.
So you're in Austin. Let's talk about why you're in Jacksonville, why you're buying in Jacksonville, and how you're actually getting those properties managed.
Yeah, so I'm in Austin, but the market here, as we were talking about earlier, it has been increasing so much. There's so much appreciation that to get cash flow right now, positive cash flow every month, mm-hmm. it's extremely hard. And right now, at the age of 26, what I want to focus on is on cash flow.
Yep.
My goal is to get to $6,000 a month coming in passively after expenses. Seeing that in Jacksonville, I can buy a house or a duplex and bring in more than the 1% rule, which is basically the ideal is to buy a house for $100,000 and rent it at 1%, right? Yeah. So you can rent it out for $1,000 a month. In Jacksonville, what I've seen is that I can buy a house for, let's say, $50,000 and it rents out for $750 or maybe $800.
So you're getting even better numbers in Jacksonville.
Exactly.
Yeah, so the number that you're talking about, essentially what we look at is the same exact thing, but we take 100 times whatever the monthly rents are, and that's the most that we can pay. So if the property is drawing in $2,500 a month in rent, we can pay $250. If it's drawing in $4,000 a month, we can pay $400,000. And what you're talking about is the fact that depending upon where you are in the United States right now, some markets, the numbers just don't work.
Exactly.
we both happen to be in markets where, as of today, they don't work. And even in both of our markets, even if you get a property at a 20 or 30% discount, a lot of times they still don't work. Mm-hmm. So areas like Jacksonville, and there's pockets of different areas like this across the United States, mm-hmm. you can still get those numbers. So you've made the decision that you're going to start stockpiling some of your money into an area like Jacksonville. Now, mm-hmm. people in my market think about doing that stuff all the time. There's markets like Memphis and Houston and Detroit that you can still cash flow in. So how are you getting it done? How are you finding those properties? How are you getting them managed? How are you able to do it confidently without, you know, being able to sleep at night?
Yeah. So from that perspective, it worked out pretty well because my brother's a wholesaler over there.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. So he's a wholesaler and he has the connections. He has partnered with a property management company mm-hmm. and they charge me 9%, 8 or 9% per yeah. property. So he walks the houses and he's able to wholesale the properties to me. I buy them and then that property management company just takes over.
Makes sense.
Yeah. And sometimes the homes already has, hey, you already have a family in them, or if not, the property management company takes over and they will find a tenant. And I actually prefer that.
Yeah.
Just so that the property management company can do their own due diligence on the tenant. They make sure that they are able to pay and stuff like that. There are some properties in Jacksonville that actually works out well where it does have a family, has that grandma that's living there for the past 10 years and she's paying it from her social security.
Yep.
I would buy that house no matter what, just because like she's been there for 10 years. She has yep. nowhere else to go and is getting paid by her retirement. So for me, that's more of a safe investment because I know she'll be there for a while.
For sure. So again, how much did you pay for that fourplex in Jacksonville, just so we can run through the numbers?
Yeah, that fourplex was $100,000.
And now, was that at a discount to market value, or was it close to what market value was?
Market value would probably be 125, okay, 130.
So you got a 30% discount on the property. And how many of the four units were already rented out when you purchased it?
There were three of them were rented out at $575.
Okay, and then the fourth one will be rented out at what?
Will be rented out at between five and 575.
Okay, so yeah, so you're above 2,000 then, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so you're above 2,000, and then what do all of your expenses equal? A little over 1,000.
If it will be over 1,000, if we get a mortgage.
Okay.
Yeah, if we get a mortgage, it will probably be around 1,000 overall. But other than that, it's just the insurance and taxes, mm-hmm. and then the, let's call it 10% for the property management company.
Yeah. So what will all of your costs be on a monthly basis, roughly?
As of right now, if we keep it cash, it'll probably be around $500 to $600 in my expenses.
And then when you refinance it and take it out, what would it be at?
It will be around $1,000 to maybe $1,100.
Okay, so your goal is to get to $5,000 to $6,000 a month.
Mm-hmm.
So you would need five or six of those, right?
Assuming
that, you know, I know you took on partners on that particular deal, but assuming that you did it on your own, mm-hmm. all you would need is five or six of those properties. And now the $5,000 or $6,000 as a goal, is that kind of what you feel like you need to live off of? Is that like your spending, I guess?
For right now, yes. That is what, and that includes my living expenses as mm-hmm. well as I put $1,000 there extra for travel and entertainment outside of Austin.
Okay.
Yeah.
So to back up, you were in corporate America, you decided you didn't want to be there. You already bought the property with your dad in Florida. You bought a property in Austin where you could house hack and live for free. Mm-hmm. You left, you continued to invest in properties. And now I know you're also a real estate agent, right?
Yes, I am. That's how I am making my money actively now.
Okay. So you've got passive income on the rental side, active income on the real estate brokerage side. What made you end up determining that you wanted to become a real estate agent, and how does that fit in with your investment strategies?
Yeah. So I wanted to become an agent just so that I could get to know the market, because back then, and we're talking about 3 years ago, I really wanted to buy properties here in Austin. I wanted to buy one a year. Mm-hmm. But the realtor that I use whenever I wanted to buy my first house in Austin, mm-hmm. we became best friends. Well, not best friends, but we became very good friends, and he became my mentor as well. Mm-hmm. And he actually, what I did is, in order for me to see if I wanted to become a realtor, I asked him if I could drive him around over the weekends for free, just so that I could learn. Mm-hmm. And because I was working my 8-to-5 job every single day. Mm-hmm. So I drove him around for probably 2 to 3 weekends, and I decided that that's something that I would love to do. Mm-hmm. So I got my license and I started being a realtor part-time. So nights and weekends worked out, because that's the time where people that are buying homes, that's mostly where they're available to see homes. So it worked out well. And then 2 years later, after I got my license, him and I partnered up. And now we have a team here with Keller Williams.
Cool. Yeah, I love the team model, because it allows people to really leverage their own time and efforts and energy.
Exactly. So
on a week-to-week basis, how many hours do you spend as a real estate agent versus as an investor?
As an investor, well, since the properties are in Florida, most of my time is being a realtor. Mm-hmm. So I would say 90% of my time is realtor, and 10% are looking at properties or emailing my brother back and forth, or talking with the property management companies. It's not much.
So you just got that fourplex. I'm assuming the goal is to get that fourth unit rented out. And then, so what is the next step in order to get the next property? And are you going to stay in Jacksonville?
Yes, I'm probably going to be staying in Jacksonville for a little while. And the plan is, in the next couple of months, to refi that house, get the cash out. Mm-hmm. And with that money, either buy a duplex or put it in another property.
Why wouldn't you stick, just out of curiosity, why wouldn't you stick with the fourplexes, considering they seem to cash flow so well?
If they, because this one was a special deal.
Okay.
My brother just knew the owner. Mm-hmm. So usually those are like $150,000, $130,000.
Yes.
So because we were able to close in 2 weeks, we managed to get that house.
I see.
But, if we're able to find another quadplex, that will be awesome. And I'll be willing to do the same thing again.
So how is your brother scouting for the properties? What type of marketing activities does he do to find them?
Yeah, so he partnered up with a guy in Atlanta. He's a huge wholesaler over there. His name is Peter Bexelman. And he markets in the Jacksonville. I think they spend like $10,000 a month in direct mail. And my brother is the one that after the owners of the home, the potential sellers, they call the Atlanta office, they negotiate, they determine a price, and then my brother goes to see the properties. Mm-hmm. And that's when my brother will tell me, Diego, I just saw this house. It's going to be priced at this much. You should buy it, or do you have the money? And if if I don't, then of course he sends it to his buyers list. But he gives me first dibs in that end.
So your brother is kind of boots on the ground for the company that's based out of Atlanta?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. So how did he get hooked up with those guys?
With those guys? Yeah. So I belong to a mastermind group called GoBundance.
Yep.
I don't know if you've heard of them, but
I have.
Awesome. So those guys are my mentors, and they are the ones that have helped me learn everything, and they mentor me to the level of where now I own 11 properties. So my brother worked for free for one of the members of GoBundance. And then 6 months later, they partnered up, and that's how he got connected to Peter Vekselman.
Talk a little bit about GoBundance, because I think it's an interesting concept.
Yeah. So GoBundance, it is a mastermind for healthy, wealthy men. And they are just hungry to have an amazing life, but they're very successful. Mm-hmm. So those guys, we get together multiple times a year, and we mastermind on our goals, on our companies that we're building, and families. And they're very focused too on adventure, mm-hmm. and making sure that you are a millionaire, a whole life millionaire, not just on the money, but they focus in spending time with family as well as having fun and having an amazing business.
So how do you, is that a program where you pay to be a member, I'm assuming?
Yes. Yes.
What is the cost for that?
The cost to be a member for GoBundance, yep. is $6,500 a year.
Yep.
And there's guys that are worth $80 million in there, as well as guys that are worth $1 million, $5 million, $10 million. So, but you do have to be a millionaire.
Okay. And I'm assuming that you and your brother have picked up a lot of good information from the people that are in the group.
Oh, for sure. For sure. So now there is another program called March to a Million. And I was actually the first member of that March to a Million. So I'm on my way, but now there's about 100 other members like me. And the GoBundance guys are the mentors to us.
I see. So the March to a Million is getting you to a net worth of $1 million?
Exactly. That's the goal.
Makes sense. So you've benefited from having mentors?
100%.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny because I'm always in coaching programs, and mm-hmm. people will say to me, I can't believe you paid 25 grand for this, or you're paying $1,500 a month for that. And at the end of the day, I always get more than my money's worth. I've never gone into any program like that and not gotten a big ROI on it.
Exactly. And the cool part is that it's like you are meeting new people, you're getting different ideas, and the guys play at a level that I'm not there yet, right? But I aspire to be like them, and because success leaves clues, and they want to help me, they're able to teach me so that I leverage their experience and I don't have to go through the same failures that they did to get to their whatever net worth is or however many businesses they have.
Yeah. I mean, it's just shortcutting the process. I mean, you can be successful, two ways. You can either copy what the people before you did, or you can trial and error it. And
exactly.
I've done both. I've done some stuff where I've just, failed and failed and failed, and then I figured something out. And I've also been mentored in other areas. And those are from now on, if I'm trying to do something new, I'm going to somebody who's ahead of me. But I've done both, and I always, now I'll go to somebody who's been above me to do it.
Yeah.
So talk about your goal is to get to the $5,000 or $6,000 a month passive income. What happens after that point? Are you going to just kind of relax for a little while, or will then the bar go up a little bit?
I think that the bar is going to go up. Right now, that is like the main goal that I focus on, just to keep me hungry and to have me accomplish that and always be thinking about that, right? But I don't see myself stopping anytime soon. But what this buys me is having the option. Mm-hmm. And that's what I want, is just having the option that if I don't want to work for a month on being a realtor, then I don't have to, because I have my passive income coming in. But it's not like I'm going to go cold turkey and just quit the next day and be done with it.
Yeah. Right. So yeah. What is your goal in terms of like how long before you think you can get to the $5,000 to $6,000 a month?
My goal is to get to that this year. To be honest, that's my goal. It's I have a website called freeby26.com, and I did that so that I can be held accountable to becoming financially free. For me, that's my $5,000 to $6,000 a month.
Yep.
And that's what I called it, so that I can work towards that goal this year.
Okay. And is that a stretch goal for you where you're like, well, it'd be great to hit it? Or do you think that's like what will happen this year most likely?
That's what will happen this year. Yeah. Yes. I just put myself in a plan so that I can make that happen.
Cool. Yeah.
And who knows? I don't know right now if the goal next, like after I complete that 5 to 6, if it will be to double that in 2 years.
Yeah.
Right. And to go more hardcore into that. Or because like right now I'm going based on like cash flow.
Yes.
Right. But later, maybe once I hit that 10 grand a month, maybe becomes, okay, I want to go more for appreciation. So I invest in cities like Austin, where like Austin is a unique city because even though prices are booming, there's still companies that are coming here. There's still businesses that are building their headquarters. Like Oracle is about to open up within a year or two. A whole new headquarters in an area in Austin that is not as developed yet. So that's just going to make prices go up even more.
Yeah, you're in a really, really different market than mine. So in my market, there's no land to build on. Everything's been built. Mm-hmm. And new employers aren't really attracted to coming into Massachusetts because we've got high taxes, we've got high regulation. Mm-hmm. You guys are the exact opposite. You've got land to build on, and you guys have got companies running into Texas, both on the regulations and on the tax benefits. So mm-hmm. it's going to be interesting. Plus, you guys have the weather on top of it. So right. you know, long term, it's definitely you know, a great place to be. So I love the goal. So I love the fact that you're trying to get, you know, to a net zero. And then once you get to that point, like, do you think you'll continue, you know, let's say 2 or 3 years down the line, let's say you even get to 10,000 a month. Mm-hmm. At that point, would you focus 100% on investing, or would you still do some of the real estate brokerage stuff?
I probably won't be doing the realtor part of it as much, mm-hmm. other than just dealing, than just helping my sphere.
Yep. Okay. So if you're helping your sphere, then you do enjoy doing it though.
Exactly. I do. Yeah. I love it. I love it because I'm helping out my friends. They're having fun. We might grab lunch, grab a beer, and then go look at properties.
Yeah. Not too bad, right?
Exactly. I like that more than doing open houses or going and door knocking for an hour or two before my open house, and try to get leads that way. Mm-hmm. Being working with my sphere, it makes it more like I choose to work with them and they choose to work with me rather than me trying to sell them on, hey, you have to work with me.
So what would you say to the person that is working at a corporate job right now and just hates getting up every single day?
Mm-hmm. I would say write down a goal that you want. It can be a monetary goal. Right. So that they can invest their money and build some passive income. I feel like building that passive income or having a side hustle will be able to quit corporate America. But the other thing is this, your lifestyle has to go down a little bit if you do want to quit corporate America. Mm-hmm. Because what a lot of people do here in Austin is they get a nice salary job making 60, 80 grand, but then they choose to live downtown. Mm-hmm. So then what happens is they're going to be stuck in the rat race because then they buy the new car and all of a sudden now they have people to impress because they live downtown and they have the new car. What I did is I was making 60 grand, but I was renting a room for 500 a mile away from where I work. So my commute was short. I didn't have to spend time on gas and my expenses were low.
So I think the saying is live for 10 years like nobody else will, and then you'll live mm-hmm. the rest of your life like nobody else can.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, I mean, I think at the end of the day, you know, to be successful in anything, you have to be willing to sacrifice, whether that's a lifestyle or time or, you know, whatever. I mean, if you do the same thing that everybody else does, you're going to get the results that everyone else gets. So, but I definitely think that, you know, if you're at a job that you hate, that can literally ruin your life, because mm-hmm. you spend more time at work over the course of your life than you do at almost anything else. Mm-hmm. And if you have a bad day at work, or you don't like going up and getting to work, that then trickles down into all the other facets of your life. And for me, you know, that was the biggest thing. I just, you know, it was just something I need to get out of. But,
exactly.
You know, I definitely think you have a great story. And if people want to reach out to you, what's the best way to get back in touch with you?
Yeah, the best way is to find me on Facebook, Diego Corso, or they can send me an email to diego@freeby26.com.
Cool. Well, I want to thank you for coming on today. You definitely have an inspiring story. And for those of you who are on the podcast now, we will be live again next week with another interview. And check out our podcast every week. And this is Tom Caffarella signing off for the Real Estate Mogul podcast. Thank you, Diego, again for coming on.
It was my pleasure. Take care.
All right. Thank you.